Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge des Nachhalt-Podcasts vom Nachhaltigkeitsbüro der HU. Heute wieder mit dem neuesten Vortrag aus unserer Ringvorlesungsreihe Der grüne Faden. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören!
So thank you once again. I also want to thank your university, the department that accepted us to give this talk today. And also ERIE thesis, and again, most of all, Edible Cities Network that we're still trying to put in place and having the best of for our cities. So as you said, I'm an associate professor of American Studies in the University of Lomé. So today I'll be sharing with you this talk entitled From Literature Studies to Green City Development, Bridging the Interest. This is the outline of my presentation. I will give the objective, why are we having this talk today? After doing that, I will present Togo very little, but I will give the background that allow me to be at the same time in literature studies and at the same time in green city development. So I will give three backgrounds to develop. The first one is based on Togo being a German colony and having to develop the culture of cotton. And also talk about the second background to this, that is my field of research, which is American studies. In American studies, I will talk about the Southern agrarians movement that was developed in the 1920s and 1930s in the US. And I'll talk about pastoral poetry, how this gave me an idea of getting interested in green city development. And I have the privilege to read one pastoral poem by Christopher Marlowe. The poem is entitled The Passionate Shepherd to His Love. Poem is about love, and I think you guys will love it. And then I will jump to the second background, which is eco-criticism, how critical issues in literature are getting people to become aware of environmental issues. And then I will conclude my talk and give a few end notes. So why are we having this presentation today? We all know that scholarship is turning today more and more multidisciplinary. Ina just said she's in biology at the same time in geography. Yesterday, we talked about very sharp areas of research, but today I think the best results are coming from multidisciplinary fields. So that's one objective of that this presentation, showing that as scholarship turns more and more multidisciplinary today, it's good also to have someone in literature but working also in green city development. Another objective for this presentation is to the idea that literature is not always about reality. Novels that we read are most of the time fiction, so we used to get detached from reality when we delve into literature, but as this presentation will show it, literature is not always a demarcation from reality. So we're going to share what we do with literature and how we use it to get closer to reality, one of which is like urban city development. So you're going to see there are some possible ties between literary studies and agricultural science. And now, how can we link both? How can we choose the materials for our teaching so that students get more interested in agricultural studies, for example? I'm going to briefly present my country, Togo. As we can see in the next page, Togo is a very, I call it a little tiny country. As you can see, this is the map of Africa, and in red you have Togo. It's somewhere between Benin and Ghana, so it's a very, very little country. Very little, but very rich in history, and we have as well a relatively small population of 8 million. The area is 56,000 square meters. For history, we were a German colony from 1884 to the breaking out of the First World War, that is 1914. So Togo stopped being a German colony because Germany lost the war and became a French colony to 1960, and Togo got its independence in April 1960. Capital city is Lomé. Greater Lomé counts today 1.5 million. The Togolese economy is mainly based in agriculture, based on agriculture. Probably that is one reason why I might be interested in agriculture. Part of Togolese economy is also based on mining, and part of it based on transportation. So those are the three main branches of Togolese economy. Before being one, as you say, this is a joke. Before being one country, Togo used to be two before. As I said, German colony, that you can see on the left here. The part that is yellow and the part that's added on the left was what Togo looked like when it was a German colony. So as I said, because of the First World War, and because the English people helped the French, part of Togolese land was added to Ghana in the west. So Togo became smaller than it used to be, that you can see on the right. So this is the present day Togo, smaller than what you can see in the left. So those are the two Togos. The first one didn't exist again. Maybe we wish that can come back someday. Now, as I said, I give the three main reasons that gave me interest while being on literature studies, to be interested in agriculture, in urban agriculture too, is that, as I said, because of colonial ties that Togo has with Germany. And you know, European powers recognized Togo as German colony in 1885 after Nachtigal signed the first protectorate agreement with Mlapatri, is the chief of Togoville, a small town in southern Togo. So Germany's attempt to claim colonial territory like Britain and Britain in the west and France in the east. So with German, under German Empire, there were many achievements in Togo. Some of those achievements were churches, there were schools, there were roads, there were railroads. And very quickly, during this short time of colonization, we had those achievements. And the Togolese national, the local people, they worked a lot with German to build those infrastructures. Local industries, I would like to say, existed already in Togo. And that assured some economic independence to local people, mainly women and pottery. I would like to stress here that German colonizer, they asked from Tuskegee Institute in the US to send some of their experts to Togo to help train local people in cotton culture. So cotton was used as a raw material at that time, and they helped the Togolese grow cotton. But it is interesting to know that we can question ourselves how the people knew about weaving already. It's because the Togolese already the world. They have cotton cultivation, and they can use that material in an industry. So the Togolese weavers, as I said, they claim paternity over the well-known Kente cloth. I will have the chance to show you one in a picture very soon. Because in the 18th century, before they were attacked and subjugated by the Ashanti in the West, in Ghana, they knew about weaving already. They knew about trading cotton and transforming cotton into cloth. So interestingly, Togo cotton was well known and manipulated already by the natives long before the arrival of the Europeans. And thanks to the German arrival, we had an industrial exploitation of cotton field, the field where Pigadan used to be, and they could exploit them. So here you can see in the left a cotton field in Togo, and you see the farmers, they were reaping some cotton that is the white in the picture. In the right side, you have weaving. That's a Togolese local weaver transforming cotton threads into the cloth that we used to call kente. You might be interested in wearing one someday. That would be very interesting, and to know that there is a local exploitation of cotton before industrial exploitation of cotton as well. So this thing continue up to date. More people continue cultivating cotton, and more people are working as weavers, transforming the cotton into local clothes that people enjoy a lot. The second background I want to talk about is my background of American studies. In American studies, we cover a period known as Southern Agrarian that is very, very interesting, and which played a big role in my life, a big role in the choice of materials we used to read and to teach also. The Southern Agrarian, as I said, that was a movement in the 1930s. 1920s and 30s, who thought that city life is getting people away from natural life, and it was a movement against modernity. So headed by Davidson, began his association with some Southern agrarian, you know, the southern part of the US mainly dependent on agriculture, especially cotton culture. So they want people to get back to nature by getting closer to land instead of growing big cities and getting demarcated from rural life. So Davidson was chiefly responsible for this decision of the group and to write essays. So they published their essay in a manifesto called "I Will Take My Stand." As you can infer from this title, it's a decision making. So Davidson shelved the agrarian distaste for industrial capitalism which they see as being destructive to American culture. So this played a lot of role, and they, it's interesting to know that they can, they could use literature to get people close to nature, to understand that industrial capitalism is destructive on the American culture. So there were 12, I want to quickly talk about them, the 12 Southern agrarians and the manifesto that they created, they call I Will Take My Stand. The first one, as you said, is Davidson. Davidson was a poet, and they say he's a reviewer and historian. Fletcher was a poet too. We had Henry Bluekind, we have Lyle Lanier, we had Andrew Nelson Little, who was poet, novelist, and essayist. We have Herman Clare and Nixon. We have others like Osley, Ransom, Tate, Wade, Warren, Young. You can see they have different backgrounds, but they could quickly understand the idea chaperoned by Davidson to write a manifesto, to use literature to get people close to nature, to rural life, and to see how interesting this is compared to modern city life that was going on. And we know that at that time of Industrial Revolution, many people, many Americans moved to the north, to bigger cities like Chicago and all, where we had the development of industries. So they could understand that getting close to rural life is one good thing. As a result, you can see in many cities in the U.S., they planted trees along roads, and they have very vast gardens that people visited visit very often. One aspect also of American study that can get people close to nature is what we call pastoral poetry. Pastoral poetry did not originate in the U.S., but in Europe, and it praised rural life, and mostly talk about shepherds, and you know, after people immigrated to the U.S., some poets continue with pastoral poetry, and they developed it as well. So a pastoral poetry is simply about exploring the fantasy of withdrawing from modern life to live in idyllic rural setting. So as you can see, all pastoral poetry draws on the tradition of the ancient poet Theocritus, who wrote romanticized visions of shepherds living rich and fulfilled lives. They had many forms, the pastoral poems, but no matter the form or structure of the poetry takes, its focus on idyllic country life is what characterizes it as pastoral poetry. So why do we have a pastoral poem? Why is the interest at all? We can say that an overriding defining theme of pastoral poems is the idea of an idealized vision of country life in which humans live simply and in harmony with nature. So other common, there are some common themes and motifs that characterize the pastoral mode that include a beautiful natural setting. So in a pastoral verse, you can infer natural setting, but the poet will paint it in a very, very beautiful way. Another characteristic is that shepherds are central characters. Shepherds who are often used as vehicles for political or religious allegory. As you read those poems, you can discover the beauty in discovering these central characters as shepherds. Another characteristic is that it's a religious allegory in pastoral poetry, aided by the common association between Christianity and shepherd flocks of sheep. Another one is the trope of a return to an idealized golden age, which we think we lost with the Industrial Revolution. So the golden age that is idealized in pastoral poetry, the golden age is about when humans live in complete harmony with nature. One other characteristic is the focus on imagined life in the country rather than reality. It's poetry, it's imagination, not reality, but this inside people in thinking of bringing nature into city life. And one last characteristic is the working belief that country life is superior to urban life. You know, with modernity, before the post-modern era, many people praised urban life, but very quickly, some of them were disillusioned. And it was the one advantage for pastoral poets to debunk this and have people believe that country life is superior to urban life. So I want to read, maybe not comment, one poem, one pastoral poem for you is by Christopher Malloy. It's called The Passionate Shepherd to His Lover. And as I say, I choose it. It's central theme of love that I know many people. I know many people love love, so you listen, I read it for you. You might appreciate it later. And if you want to read it later, you just can have it on Google, The Passionate Shepherd to His Love. So here it goes. Come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove that valleys, groves, hills, and fields, woods or steepy mountain yields. And we will sit upon the rocks, see the shepherds feed their flocks by shallow rivers to whose falls melodious birds sing madrigals. And I'll make thee bears of roses and a thousand fragrant posies, a cap of flowers and a kirtle embroidered all with leaves of myrrh, a gown made of the finest wool, which from our pretty lands we pour, fair lined slippers for the cold with buckles of the purest gold, a belt of straw and ivy birds with coral clasps and amber spelled. And if these pleasures may thee move, come live with me and be my love. The shepherd swains shall dance and sing for thy delight each May morning. If this delight thy mind may move, then live with me and be my love. So I think this is an interesting pastoral poem. It highlights many things that you find only in country life, where like valleys, the rocks, the shepherd, the swan, etc. So by having your students read poems like this and comment them, it takes them, even if it's in an imaginative way, to get closer to country life. So this is one thing we do to get people close to a country life. Another background I want to talk about is the third one, which is eco-criticism. Eco-criticism, as you say, is one school of thought we use in literature, like formalism, like deconstruction, like postmodernism, schools of thought that we use in order to interpret text. But today there's growing interest in eco-criticism that we still use in literature. So eco-criticism is simply the study of literature and the environment from an interdisciplinary point of view, where literature scholars analyze texts that illustrate environmental concerns and examine the various ways literature treats the subject of nature. Yeah. So eco-criticism takes an interdisciplinary point of view by analyzing the works of authors, researchers, and poets in the context of environmental issues and nature. So some of the scholars of this school of thought, they brainstorm possible solutions for the correction of the contemporary environmental situation, though not all eco-critics agree on the purpose, methodology, or scope of eco-criticism. So by using this school of thought to analyze texts, this scholar, they highlight one burning issue of today, which is the destruction of environment. So this is one way of getting people aware of this danger by using literature and keeping them awake on this issue that we are all concerned with today. So part of this, we call it eco-poetry, which is poetry with strong ecological emphasis or message. So many poets, poems, and books of poems have expressed ecological concern now, bringing ecology at the center of literature, of poetry. But only recently have the term eco-poetry been used. You can know that. So those eco-poetry is not something that we are used to. But today, it has come to the center of literature of poetry, and it's now a subgenre. There's now a subgenre of eco-poetry. So I'd like to highlight two scholars of eco-criticism. One is Ursula Heiser. Ursula Heiser's interesting text on greening English. You might find that in read necessarily. You might be very interested in reading Heiser's greening English. Daring title, Greening English, Recent Introduction to Eco-Criticism. You might find it and read it. That would be very, very interesting. And this book by Lawrence Buell, entitled The Environmental Imagination, also available in Harvard University Press. You might read all this literature. It, as I said, brings people to become aware of issues of environment. So those three backgrounds, as I said, are mixed up what made me today not see myself separately in literature and separately in ecology, and not even thinking that this one is my field or not. But I want to say that those are the three basics that I use with my training to be at the same time as a professor of literature, and at the same time getting engaged in green city development. Is it possible for me to say I conclude? I'm not sure, but I have to say a few words to conclude, because I have to finally. So I will say that from literature studies to green city development, there's one just one step, and that step is the interest, the step you need to take from one side to the other is the interest. And that interest in me in literature and at the same time in agriculture has become a bridge so solid that going from one area to the other is no longer difficult for me. And I want to say that, interestingly, literature serves agricultural science just as agricultural science serves literature. We use literature to get people interested in agriculture, just as agriculture provides the materials that we use to write literature, to read literature, and to teach literature. So now, as we encourage students and other colleagues to continue reading, because reading can be used to foster consciousness about environmental issues. And for us lecturers, they should be very careful choice of materials, because okay, as we want learners to be more interested in politics, we'll choose to read books about politics. So at the same time, if we choose materials that talk about environment, protection of environment, and students read them, we think that this contributes a lot in growing interest in them and getting close to nature, not having to destroy nature, because literature has helped them fully know that by destroying nature, you destroy yourself. So I want to finish with a few end notes. This is, those two are pictures of the city of Lomé. Beautiful here. You can see some green gardens, and we want to develop them more. In the left side, you know that we have the blessing of the, at the right side, you can see we have blessing of Atlantic Oceans, along which some people grow gardens of vegetables to feed their families with, and that's a growing activity in Lomé. People are interested in doing that. At the University of Lomé, we have three excellence centers. One of them is in avian culture, but some of them also in agriculture. You can see students here on hold trees to plant. There is on campus we have students association. I talk about Jeves who work in protecting the environment. They are students. I want to thank them here, express to them my gratitude. They are very engaged. They plant trees, they take care of them. So that's one advantage of having students do this on campus and see themselves engaged, see themselves at the center of this. So thank you for your attention.